The Toby Gribbin Show. Highlights.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Martine Croxall is a presenter on BBC News and BBC World News, known for her warmth and humour. She joined BBC News in 2001 and has covered every major news story ever since. Last year, it fell to Martine to announce the death of His Royal Highness the Prince Philip on all the BBC's English-speaking channels, and she was also on air when the terror attacks took place in London and Paris. And she's with us here just now. Good afternoon. How are you today?
Hello, Toby. I'm very well, thank you. I better be warm and humorous then.
Yeah, you better. So what is a typical day like working at BBC News?
Every day is different, which is what makes it such a great job to have. Yeah. So on a normal day, you would have a plan of what the news stories you're going to cover. And I get into work a couple of hours before I'm due to go on air, often on air for about 3 hours at a time, which is quite a long time. You know, you feel like you've done it by the end. You've had to concentrate quite hard. So I go in and I talk to the assistant editor who has decided which stories we're going to cover and how we're going to cover them. And the things I'm particularly interested in are finding out who are the interviewees that I'm going to be talking to so I can do some research around the subject and their viewpoints and work out what questions I'm going to ask. We do get sent guest briefs by our very hardworking producers who give you a sort of steer as to what they think you might want to ask. But in the end, it's up to the presenter to decide. Yeah. And of course, you might decide in advance what you think you're going to ask, and then the interview might go a different way. And it's really important to listen so that you don't miss out on a really good follow-up question that you might not have expected to ask. The other things that I want to know about are live events. So say there's a press conference from Downing Street, I will want to know when that's happening, who's going to be speaking and why. And then I will need to sort of know the context of the subject matter so I can talk around it.
Yeah.
So, and then I go to makeup. We're not allowed to be in makeup for very long at the moment because of COVID. So you get your hair done, all your makeup done, and you do the other. While the makeup artist is doing half the job for you. And then you put your kit on, which is this strange sort of elasticated black belt that sits under your clothes with two pockets in it to hold your talkback unit, which means that you can hear the gallery. That's all the noise in your ear to give you direction. And your microphone.
Yeah.
So, and then it means you can walk around the studio and you're not stuck to the desk all the time. So, and then I go into the studio about 10 minutes before I go on air, put that kit on, and off you go.
Yeah. And is the preparation sometimes limited? Because I suppose a lot of the stories you are covering might only break whilst you're on air.
Exactly. So what I've just described is when there's no breaking news and you've planned your output. So in the table, the desk that I sit at, which has a glass top, there's a computer facing up, and in it are our running orders, and each running order lasts for half an hour, and it contains your headlines and your cues, which is the introductions that you're going to read, which appear on auto cue. But when there's a breaking story that happens, all of that pre-prepared information gets dropped, and you are faced basically with an empty screen. And so, for example, in the case of the Paris attacks or the London Bridge terror attacks, which, as you mentioned, I was on air for, you get initial reports coming in, you report those, you try to get eyewitness accounts. You have to be really careful which social media accounts you follow, because a lot of it is wrong, fake. It's just people's opinion and their guesswork. And we don't want to be peddling that. So you're asking those basic journalistic questions of who, what, when, where, why, how. And sometimes you're sort of really inching your way into a story because it's unfolding as you're talking. So, yeah, that's when it gets very exciting, because you're trying to work out what's really going on.
And is there more preparation that goes into the sort of big bulletins like the 1 o'clock news and the 6 o'clock news than on the news channel, or is it still about the same?
It's really different. You're comparing very different beasts. So the news channel, I adore the news channel because it's all a bit crash bang wallop, and you don't quite know what you're going to get. There's a huge amount of preparation that goes into it, but you are having to, you know, feed that machine hour upon hour upon hour. Whereas with the big set piece bulletins, the network national bulletins, the 1, 6, and 10, you do spend a lot of time really thinking hard about your writing, your cues, the question that you're going to ask the correspondent. But you don't have regular guests like you would. You wouldn't interview scientists or politicians on those bulletins. You only interview correspondents and you agree the question with them in advance, which is not a practice I would normally advise for anything. But you do that with correspondents so that you're getting the best possible question on air, because you've often only got one question or two questions because they've only got a minute, minute 15 to talk. So yeah, we do sit there and think really hard about it because we've got the times. So I present the 1 o'clock news quite often these days, and also the network bulletins on a weekend on Saturday night. So you do have a bit more time to be more considered, but there's still a rush right at the last minute. It's really funny. You sit there for hours and then there's this frantic rush to get everything on air at the last minute. It's just the way news is, you know, stuff comes in at the last minute because you want it to be the most recent pictures, the freshest top line, you know, the most recent news. So there's always a bit of a scramble at the last minute, which makes it exciting.
Yeah, that's the thing. I guess if I was like the director or whatever, that would really stress me out knowing that not all the content is already prepared.
Yeah, I went on air the other day and our top story, our top package report at 1 o'clock wasn't ready.
Yeah.
So we were literally in the headlines and the title sequence. We didn't know whether the top story was going to make. And so we just had, I just got a message in my ear of what I needed to do, which would probably go straight to the correspondent in Lviv, in Ukraine, and talk to her for longer than we would have done had we had the report. Yeah. As it turned out, it was edited just in the nick of time.
Wow.
You just have to, it might sound a bit scary, but when you've been doing it a long time, these things really don't worry you because you're just so used to it.
Yeah. So where did your love of journalism start? How did you actually get into this sort of work?
It was a very lowly beginning, Toby, I can tell you. So I'd done a geography degree at Leeds University, and then I'd taken some time out to travel through Africa to see some of that geography. And I had an idea that I thought I wanted to be a radio magazine producer. So not news, but sort of chat. I just thought it would be interesting to do something that was creative and that was about talking to different people about different things. But I never, ever intended to be on air. I didn't want to be a radio presenter. Certainly didn't want to be a television presenter.
Yeah.
I was quite shy when I was growing up. And a lot of my contemporaries from school were a bit surprised that I ended up doing this job. I mean, I was kind of quietly confident in my own way, but I was the girl who blushed the colour of a beetroot when I had to speak in class. So my sort of friends from school are like, what, you now do what? But you know, I'm not 14 anymore, and thankfully, as my parents promised, that tendency to blush terribly did leave me in the end. It was accidental. So I called my local radio station, which is Radio Leicester, because I'm from Leicestershire, and I'd gone back to live with my mum and dad after university, like a lot of people do, because you've got no money. And I rang the local radio station. I said, I'd really like to come and see what you do. And in those days, you could do that. So the station manager said, yeah, come in and see. And I walked into the newsroom and I was kind of equally terrified and excited because it was busy. People were running around, you know, trying to get stuff on air as quickly as they could for news bulletins. And I was placed with the morning phone-in programme. And I literally started by making the tea.
Wow.
And answering the phones and doing bits of clerical work. And I was like a sponge. I just really absorbed everything that was going on around me. And again, never, ever wanted to be on air. And then one day, there was no one to go and do a live interview. I did my broadcasting bit back to front because most people start doing pre-recorded stuff so that if you make a mistake, you can correct it. But oh no, I started doing all the live stuff. So there was a launch of a charity campaign to raise money to plant a national forest in northwest Leicestershire. And this was the launch of it. And I interviewed somebody from the charity and a man dressed as a tree. And there's a fantastic photograph. It was in the Leicester Mercury. It was also on the front cover of the BBC's internal magazine, which back then used to be printed every week. It was called Ariel. And it is still called Ariel, but you only get it online these days. And there's a photograph of me, age 22, looking very sort of young and fresh-faced, interviewing this man in a rubber tree suit. And that's how it started. Mm. And I seemed to be able to speak fluently and describe what was going on, because you're the eyes of the listener, as everybody who works in radio knows. And I did a good job of it. Mm. And then they said, we'd like to train you to use the radio car. So for the next 6 months, I spent 4, 5, 6 days a week going around Leicestershire and Rutland, reporting live from various different places. Mm. And then there was a real push in the 1990s, which is when this was, for everyone to have journalistic training. So they wanted me to be able to work in the newsroom at Radio Leicester, because I was good at doing live news reporting, but they wanted me to have the kind of theoretical and practical backup. So I went off to London for three weeks, and learnt my trade. And then I went off to Bristol to put those skills into practice in the Bristol newsroom. And then I went back to Radio Leicester as a reporter. And I did every job on the station, really. I did news editing shifts, news reading shifts. I was really good at creative packaging, which is where you turn a story into something interesting to listen to. And then I started to present programmes and never stopped. This has happened all throughout my career. It's happening again to me now, which is a really nice position to be in. You get asked to do more and more and more, and you become better at it, and you're reliable and you're flexible, and you hopefully you're not too egotistical and you people like working with you, and then you get a chance to do lots of new things. Yeah. So I was on air 7 days a week, and then I went to work in just a training attachment at East Midlands Today in Nottingham to learn some television. And I was there for about 4 months, and then I landed a job about 2 months later at BBC Elstree.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Which is where they make EastEnders.
Yeah, Muppet Show.
Yeah, I was working for Newsroom Southeast, which was the precursor to what's now BBC London. And again, I was just fortunate, I suppose. I turned up as a broadcast journalist, so you're a bit of a jack of all trades, you do a bit of everything.
Yeah.
And then one day, I'd been there about, a week and a half, and I got a phone call one night to say, you're doing the breakfast bulletins tomorrow. And I said, yes, I know, I'm producing them, I'm outputting them. And they went, no, you're presenting them.
Well,
Somebody's gone sick. I was absolutely terrified. And I'd done loads of radio, but actually, you know, being on air in front of a camera was totally different. Mm. And but again, I did it, and I did it okay, and I got better and better at it, and then I ended up being on air 7 days a week presenting.
Yeah.
So it's partly about being in the right place at the right time. It's also wanting it and working hard and really putting the hours in. I mean, gosh, I used to work some really long hours. I mean, I didn't have any children, I wasn't married, you know, I had no responsibilities, and I could just throw myself into work. And it was the most fantastic grounding. It really was. And I'm still doing new things now, which is really exciting. I've been with the BBC 30 years.
Wow.
And I'm still getting to do new things. So, it's a partly about being in the right place at the right time and also saying yes to things that frighten you.
Yeah. And if you went back in time and told yourself all those years ago that in the future you would be a core presenter on BBC News, how do you think you would have reacted?
I would have said, don't be ridiculous. I would never have believed it. It wasn't how I saw myself. It just wasn't in my sights.
Mm.
I didn't even want to do it. So it wasn't a case of wanting to do it and not thinking you could. It wasn't even what I set out to do, but I'm so glad I did. It's almost as if the job chose me.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea. Mm. And of course, you recently won Celebrity Mastermind as well.
That must have been fun. Oh, it was once it was over. Yeah. So I was asked if I'd like to do it. And, you know, months in advance, you go, yeah, sure. And they liked the subject that I chose, which was Nellie Bly, who was the most famous journalist in North America in the late 1800s. And she was the pioneer of investigative journalism, known as stunt journalism back then. She had herself rather riskily admitted to a mental hospital in New York, almost didn't get out again. And when she got out, she reported about the conditions and the treatment of the patients, and she changed the way mental health patients were treated.
Mm.
And then she went round the world into following the fictional Phileas Fogg around the world in 80 days journey. And she did it for real on her own, which was very unusual for a woman to do in those days. And she did it in 72 days. And then she wrote about it. She was a foreign correspondent. She was a social justice campaigner. She was a feminist. And she was an industrialist and an inventor. She was a really amazing woman. She'd probably been quite annoying, actually, but she was fascinating. Anyway, so that was my chosen subject. And then just before I was going to Belfast to record it, I just thought, what am I doing? This is insane. I don't want to do this. I was so stupid to agree. Anyway, it's too late. So, you know, I turned up and I sat in that studio. It's a very beautiful studio. There's no audience anymore because of COVID.
Mm.
And it's an illuminated floor. That black chair looks tiny.
Wow.
And they trickle that music in, and it's so menacing.
Oh.
And it just makes you feel even worse. And I sat there and I couldn't stop my legs shaking. I was so nervous. And I'm used to being in a live TV studio. I love live TV. But that, and I was even being asked questions by my colleague, Clive Murray, who I've worked with for years. But it was really, really scary. But as it turned out, I'd done my homework. You know, I'm a bit head girl about these things. And I got 10 out of 10. Thankfully, on my specialist subject, and then I've got 11 out of 15 on the general knowledge round. I think journalists and stand-up comedians tend to do quite well with the general knowledge because we're absorbing in information all the time. So I came home with a trophy.
Yeah,
I was very happy about that.
Yeah, I was going to say, being a news presenter must be an advantage because you have to be quite knowledgeable, I suppose, and actually you've witnessed a lot of the things that questions might be about.
Yes, very much so. And also, as a geographer, by my sort of academic background. I'm just interested in a lot of things. I'm a fellow of the Royal Geographical Society. I host events for them. So I get to learn about and listen to lots of really interesting, clever, well-informed people. And you absorb some of it.
Yeah.
I mean, not all of it. I'm not an expert on anything in particular, apart from possibly equal pay. Mm. But yeah, your brain holds on to quite a lot of stuff. It's just a case of accessing it.
Yes. Now, last year, of course, it was down to you to break the news of the death of His Royal Highness the Prince Philip. What was going through your head in that moment?
I don't want to be here. I want to run away from this studio, was what was really going on in my head, if I'm honest. The hour before it, 11 to 12 o'clock on the 9th of April, was very quiet, not much going on. And we'd kind of been having a bit of a laugh and a joke, you know, behind the scenes. And then going up to the 12 o'clock news, literally minutes before, I was unaware of this completely, but out in the newsroom, it had been, you know, we'd been told that he had died, sadly.
Yeah.
And I read the headlines and still didn't know, but everyone in the gallery, which is where they sit, you know, outputting the, it's where they, like the control room, if you like, they all knew. And then during the title sequence, the like 10 seconds of music off the back of the headlines, Chris Gray, who's a fantastic producer who was on shift that day, he said, "Martine, we think the Duke's died." And I just went, "Don't joke about this. It's not funny." And he said, "I'm going to send you the confirmation." So he sent me like an email into my computer in the desk. And I just went, "No." And I was told that I was to break the news off the back of a report about transport and COVID. And I just knew in that moment that I was going to have to change gear and that I got to get it right for everyone. I got to get it right for the BBC. I'd got to get it. It's really, it might sound a bit pompous, and I don't mean it to, but I felt like I'd got to get it right for everyone in the country.
Yeah.
Got to get it right for the Queen. You know, this might sound a bit exaggerated, but I was very conscious of the fact that, you know, this had happened during COVID. Lots and lots of people had lost people they cared about because of coronavirus. And here was the Queen, who, you know, her husband and consort of 73 years had died.
Mm.
And in a way, it's a great leveller, isn't it? Because whether you're the Queen or whether you're just a sort of regular member of the public, to lose somebody you care about it's a common thing for us all.
Yeah.
So I kept thinking about her, and that helps with tone, because the most important thing for a presenter to get right is tone and pace. Don't rush. Think about what you're saying. Think about how you're saying it. Mean what you say. And so I had for about 4 minutes that I had, during which I interviewed down on the phone Nicholas Witchell, our royal correspondent, and we kept going for about 4 minutes until we reached the 9 minutes past 12 mark, at which point, having taken off a necklace and put on a black jacket out of vision, we brought all of the English speaking TV channels together, and I broke the news, and we went into the agreed programme. And once that was underway, I settled down. I stopped feeling quite so panicky, but I did feel very clearly that I got to get it right, because this was going to become part of the archive and it was going to be played again and again and again, and I couldn't afford to get it wrong. Now, fortunately, I work with extremely professional, talented people. So although I'm the person that you see on the screen, there are dozens and dozens and dozens of other people behind the scenes, producers, other journalists, editors, people who have production skills. So their sound, vision, comms, direction, camera operators, floor managers, they're all really good at their jobs too. So you all work together and hopefully you get it right. And that day we did.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Clive Myrie actually said this to you on Mastermind, but it's something that if you get it wrong, that's going to define your career, isn't it?
Yeah, it's wrong forever.
Mm.
And lots of my colleagues said, "I'm glad it was you." I mean, they'll all be perfectly capable of doing it too. It's just, it's as you say, it could be career defining in a good way or a bad way.
Yeah.
So you just want to do every story justice, you know.
Mm.
Often people's lives are deeply affected by the stuff we're reporting, and you have to get it right for them.
Yeah. And although in that moment when it first broke, you wanted to run away, do you still think it's perhaps a privilege that it was you that got to break such big news?
Absolutely. I think my job is a privilege every single day, because you can make a difference to people's lives with the things that we do, because you can give people information, hopefully, that's helpful to them. But it's a total privilege.
Yeah.
And I'm very glad it fell to me and that I did a good job of it.
Yeah. Now, would you want to do any other presenting outside of the news?
Yes, I would. But it's about the opportunities that come along. I mean, so today I'm going to North Wales and I'm going to be presenting from Brill in North Wales. So it's news, but I'm out of the studio. So that's quite a nice thing to get to do. I would quite like to make some documentaries about some things that I am interested in, but I haven't formulated those properly yet. I wouldn't actually mind having a go to quiz show.
Mm.
Not mastermind, because yeah. I was doing that. But, you know, I don't know. Something like that might be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll watch it.
If I got the chance.
Yeah. Well, where are we able to keep up to date with you everywhere?
I'm on the BBC News Channel four times a week, or on the BBC 1 o'clock news, or the network news on a Saturday night. I'm on Twitter. So I'm very fortunate to have a lot of followers.
Yeah.
Most of whom are extremely nice people, and I try to engage with as many people as I can. It's getting more and more difficult now because there are so many of them, but I do try, and you can have some really nice interactions with people. So that's where, really. I haven't joined Instagram or TikTok yet because my children have told me I can't, because I'd be too embarrassing. I think it's actually because I'd probably get more followers than that.
Yeah, probably.
I don't know, but they don't want me to embarrass them, because, you know, mums are really embarrassing, aren't they? It's social media or the telly, really. Sometimes I host events as well that people can come to. So
yeah, well, many thanks for joining us here today. It's been great to talk to you.
It's a pleasure, Toby. Thank you for inviting me.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
The throbbing pulse of sound. The Toby Gribben Show.